flown. I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Betsy, sweet Betsy, my fair prairie rose, so slender and pale in your mail order clothes, all decked out in ruffles and ribbons and rings. You're just like an angel, only where are your wings?
Oh, Betsy, sweet Betsy, let's change your name and stake a claim where cares will never find us.
Oh, Betsy, sweet Betsy, we'll hitch our dreams to a 20 mule team and leave the trail behind us.
Starch-collared Parson lives down by the gulch. He'd hitch us right up, but he charges too much. The old circuit rider will be just as nice. He'll splice for half price and bring his own bag of rice.
Oh, Betsy, sweet Betsy, we'll jingle spurs on cockle burrs where prairie dogs won't mind us.
Oh, Betsy, sweet Betsy, with nothing to eat but buffalo meat, no cares will ever find us.
Oh, Betsy, do tell what a swell howdy-do. Your cousins by dozens will buy presents for you. Cousins by the dozens will have
your old Aunt Aggie
and my Uncle John. He's got some acres I can use when he's gone.
Rawr. Oh, Betsy,
oh, my Betsy, you're the sweetest little Betsy I could ever find.
Ever find.
And you'll be mine.
Yes, I'll be yours.
Let's change your name and stick out a claim where cares will never find us.
Sweet Betsy, my fair prairie rose, so slender and pale in your mail order clothes, all decked out in ruffles and ribbons and rings. You're just like an angel, only where are your wings? Oh, Betsy, sweet Betsy,
sweet Betsy,
let's change your name and stake out a claim where cares will never find us.
We'll be Dying.
There's love in them hills far away. Whoopee-dee,
whoopee-dee-i-ee,
just waiting for Betsy and me.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you're all having a fantastic weekend. Tonight, boy, do we have some good ones for you. We begin with the great actor Tyrone Power in an episode of Suspense. Suspense was on the air from 1942 for over 20 years. It was about the last program to go off the air in the golden age of radio drama. And then the second program is also from Suspense. It's called The Lie. It stars the great actor Mickey Rooney. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com. Again, thank you so much for tuning in. Just have a fantastic weekend. And now, let's enjoy our wonderful old-time shows.
Tonight presents the story of a man who found that everything was against him. His wife distrusted him. His best friend had to give him an alibi, all because of a girl, a dead girl. Our story is called The Guilty Always Run. Our star, Mr. Tyrone Power.
To leave me alone all evening like that. It's way after 12.
Listen, you told me it was all right. You told me to go.
Answer the phone, will you?
Okay.
Or do you expect me to leap across the room
and... Okay, okay. Hello. Hello? Hello? Hello, anybody there?
Well?
Nobody there.
What's the matter?
I thought I heard something. Hello? Hello? Hello, hello?
Somebody playing a joke, Jeff?
I guess so.
Karen?
Don't start anything, Janie, huh?
Was it Karen?
Janie, baby. Janie.
What?
Listen.
Sure. Sure, sweetie. What do you want me to listen to?
It's not my fault you've got your hip in a cast.
It's not your fault I've got my hip in a cast, dear.
Oh, cut it out, will you?
I'm clumsy. I go along on vacations to the beach and fall off a surfboard and break my hip, and my husband meets another... Are you going to answer the phone?
Uh-uh. No.
Bring the phone over to me, Jeff. Let me answer it.
Sure. Here.
Hello?
What's the matter?
You tell me.
I asked you a question. What's the...
Here, you take the phone.
Hello? Who is this? Hello?
Help me. Help me, Jeff.
Yes, this is...
Jeff.
This is Jeff. Who... Hello? Hello, hello. Well, whoever it was hung up, Janie.
Who was it, Jeff?
I don't know.
Was it Karen?
Now, why don't you cut that out?
It was a girl. Was it Karen? Karen sounded like she needed help.
Loaded, probably.
What does she look like? You never told me.
Very tanned, very tall.
And very beautiful.
She really is.
Calling here after midnight. Doesn't she know you're married? Didn't you tell her?
I told her.
You better go see if she's all right.
Now, listen. Karen...
You'd better go see...
Yeah. The drive was 8 miles from Zuma Beach. Nearly 2 in the morning and a full moon and a few clouds and phosphorescence riding the lip of the surf. No one was home at Karen Lawrence's house. Her white convertible wasn't there either. I went home. Janie was sleeping, so I waited till morning to tell her. Then I went out on the beach and started to work on the surfboards with Lou, a friend of mine who'd taken the place next door.
You know how I'd raise this, then?
How?
Put a beer bottle cap on it and then set a hot iron on the cap. The dent'll pop right up.
Yeah, I might try it when...
Hi.
Oh, hello there.
Ah, hello.
I'm Phyllis George. Which one of you is Jeff?
Not Lou, huh?
Jeff.
Always Jeff.
Me.
What did you do with Karen?
What are you talking about?
I drove out to see her. We were going shopping today. She's not home. The inside of her house is a wreck.
Why ask me?
She told me yesterday she was going to load up her surfboard and try to trap you into some moonlight surfing. How did she make out?
She made out good.
Yeah, we went surfing.
Where's Karen, Sonny? All right, baby. I'm going to the cops.
We finished resurfacing the boards after that. Not much talk. I kept looking down the road for the cops that girl promised. No cops. After a while, I said to Lou, "See you," and went back to Janie. Carried her out to the strand of white beach we bought for the summer. Oiled her back and her shoulders and her arms and then her face. Then lay down and set the ball of sun spinning. And that's how a day got done. Around 10 that night, the moon was low but gaining altitude fast.
Jeff?
Yeah, honey?
It's a beautiful night out there. Very beautiful.
Uh-huh.
No sense you sitting around listening to the radio. Why don't you take the board, go surfing in the moonlight?
No, no, Janie, I...
Listen to me, sweetie. If I could, I'd go with you. There's nothing right now I want more to do. So you go, huh, sweetie? Don't let me ruin all of it for you.
Oh, Janie, I don't mind.
You go. Take the board and go because I asked you to. Because I want you to.
I went. And the waves were coming in gentle and fast and moon-crested from about 150 yards offshore. I paddled the board out, easy and slow, to where the moon was shaping them. It's where I saw her, Karen. Her hair floating and woven in a web of kelp, and her face moon white, and her lips and splotches of color on her throat where the bruises were. Karen in the wet shroud of a silk dress. Dead Karen in the sodden jacket I'd lent her the night before. When I got back to the house, Janie was asleep. I didn't wake her. I got into some clothes, went out to the car.
Hey, wait a minute. Is that you, Jeff?
Yeah, it's me, Lou. Lou, come out here a minute, will you?
Sure. I couldn't sleep. I was reading. I heard the car, and I thought maybe I'd...
Something I want to tell you about last night, Lou. Something you don't know.
All I know about last night is that you and Karen went surfing by moonlight. This morning, a girl named Phyllis rode up and yelled cop in your face because no more beautiful Karen. After that, I lose you.
Just listen to me, huh?
Well, I'm listening, Jeff.
Well, like you said, I went surfing with her. After that, she needled me into taking her to that joint down the highway for a beer.
Well, it's been done. A beautiful girl sometimes merits a beer. Ah, Janie doesn't know about it, huh? That's what you're trying to say?
It was while we were in the joint. She... Well, you know Karen. You'd know what she...
Yeah, if only you're better than I. Is that what you did, Jeff?
I had to walk out on her. She followed me out. I told her off. Put her in her car and told her off for the rest of time.
Married, you said to her. Happily married.
And a couple of other things I said. She cried, and then she drove off. I walked the beach for a long time.
Jeff.
It's the last I saw her, Lou. I swear it. I swear it.
What's eating on you, kid?
A little while ago, I found her. Floating in a kelp bed. Dead. I think murdered.
Where were you going just now, Jeff?
To the police.
Jeff.
Yeah?
Police is where grief is.
What?
You told Karen off, you said, and never saw her again. You swore it when I didn't even know what you were talking about.
But don't you believe me? Don't...
Police is where grief is. Police and Karen murdered can burst wide open what you got with Janie. And you forgot a thing, Jeff.
What?
You didn't walk a lonesome beach last night. You left Karen and you came to my house. We sanded the surfboards. Isn't that what you forgot?
Lou.
From me to you, an alibi. An alibi maybe you don't need, but from me to you. Because of what you and Janie mean to me.
Because of what he said. Because it was a big grief. Because it might kill what it was Janie and I had together. A summer and beach and sky and sea and a love I had for her. I waited till Lou had gone back into his house. Then I swam out to where Karen was. I took off her the jacket I'd lent her the night before. I swam back to shore and found a littered strand of beach and burned the jacket. And buried the scorched rags. And I went home and slept. And it was Janie who woke me.
Jeff. Jeff, there's a fellow outside.
Huh? What?
A fellow. Outside. Wants to talk to you.
Who?
A Mr. Anders. A policeman.
Look, Janie, no matter what. That phone call last night.
From Karen? That phone call?
No matter what, don't say anything about it. Nothing.
A fellow's waiting at the door for you, Jeff.
No matter what, do you hear? No matter... You want to see me?
You, Jeff Marlowe?
That's right.
Swimmer found a girl out in the kelp this morning. Girl we all know around here. Karen Lawrence.
Well, what's that got to do with me?
She was murdered, Mr. Marlowe, strangled. Somebody killed her and put her out on the tide. Let's go inside and talk about it. Karen Lawrence, Mr. Marlowe. How come she's dead?
I don't know.
Jeff?
Oh, it's nothing, Janie. This gentleman just wants to know if I know Karen Lawrence.
Why does the gentleman want to know that, Jeff?
Well...
Why do you want to know that?
She's dead.
That's not the question I asked you.
She was murdered.
That's still not the question.
Asking around about her, your husband's name gets mentioned more than anybody else's.
I see.
And she was murdered, all right, in case you've got any doubt about it. Strangled. Bruise marks here and here. Two thumbs, you know. Wearing all her clothes. Good swimmer, I understand, so we've got to tab at murder. And I've got to ask, Mr. Marlowe, if you killed her.
No, sir, I did not.
But you know her.
Oh, yes, sir.
Now, look, you don't have to yes, sir, and no, sir, me.
Okay.
You were with her last night. We got that from Phyllis George, a friend of hers.
Well, look, this is what happened. One day, Karen comes up from Malibu with a board and pretty helpless about getting from her car to the surf.
Yeah, when was this?
10 days ago. 11.
11. 11. The afternoon of the morning I broke my hip.
Well, I can pick it all up till yesterday, Marlowe. Talk has it she liked you.
Did talk have it I tried to ignore her?
Yes, it did.
Did talk have it that right off I told her I was married?
Yes, yes, it did. I also checked next door, your friend Lou Foster. He says he was with you around the time the girl was probably killed.
Then what are you coming around here for? And
what about the bar? Bar on the coast highway near Topanga Canyon, Marlowe. Barkeep said
okay,
that you were...
Okay, okay. Like a fool, I took her down there for a beer night before last.
Night before last is when she was killed.
To talk it out, to tell her to stay away. Look, maybe to you it sounds...
Now don't get yourself excited, Marlowe. That's just what I do. Dame was chasing me, didn't want her to. Take her some quiet place and talk to her. Adult, over a beer. Well, I hope your hip gets better, Mrs. Marlowe.
Thanks.
And thank you for your courtesy, both of you.
Sure.
Jeff?
Yeah?
You didn't tell me you took her for a drink.
Just for a beer.
Oh.
Now look, Janie.
To tell her not to love you anymore, Jeff? What's been going on, anyhow?
Hello?
Mr. Marlowe?
That's right. Who's this?
Norm. Oh, Mr. Marlowe, I got the Topanga Innery on the Coast Highway. You've been in here. In fact, night before last, you were in here with Karen Lawrence. I understand from the police that Karen...
What do you want?
I can't talk to you over the phone, Mr. Marlowe, but I wish you'd stop in here any time in the next half hour or so. If I were in your shoes, I would, Mr. Marlowe. Bye.
Who was it?
Nobody.
Who was it, Jeff?
Nobody. I'm going out.
You don't want to hear my troubles, Mr. Marlowe, so I'll just tell you this. I didn't tell that policeman about the argument you and that girl had in here. Since you were the only ones in here, then I'm the only one who knows about it. And what happened out front when you left, how she was carrying on and crying. And from what Mr. Anders, that policeman, said, she must have been murdered a couple hours after you left here with her. Now, look, I don't know what you told the police, but you came down when I called, Mr. Marlowe, so what am I to figure? As long as you're here, Mr. Marlowe, I'd like to know what it feels like to go out to Santa Anita with $1,000 and not care if I win or lose. With $1,000, Mr. Marlowe. Today, Mr. Marlowe.
$1,000? For what, Jeff? For what I need. To buy off a murder charge.
Are you crazy, kid?
You got it, Lou. You gonna give it to me?
You're crazy? How deep into it can you get? $1,000 now? $1,000 a week, maybe, for the rest of your life? And
you're
then
not gonna do it, huh? You're not gonna give it to me.
Who you buying from, Jeff?
Sloan. Runs the beer joint on the highway. He saw me and Karen outside his...
$1,000, huh? He must have seen a lot. You'll get it back, Lou. Every nickel.
All right, Jeff. Drive me to my bank. And Jeff...
Thanks. Thanks.
That's not what I meant. This is what I meant. This'll do it, Jeff. It's as far as I can go. So luck and a long life, kid.
We just stared at each other for a while. Then I had to lift his hand from his side to shake it. No more talk. I drove him to his bank. Lou got the money. He gave it to me. I drove him to his house and then went to Sloan's joint. Bought a bottle of beer. Drank half of it. Paid him $1,000 for it. Sloan laughed from deep in his stomach.
Hello?
Hi, honey.
Who is this? I'm sorry. There's no one here.
Honey, baby, it's Jeff.
No, there's no one here by that... Jeff, listen. The police are here. They...
What are you...
That you, Marlo? This is Anders, Marlo, Sheriff's Office. Now, listen. Sloan, that beer joint fella, he called the office a little while ago and said you offered him $100 to keep his mouth shut.
$100?
Now, you come in, Marlo, because when you did that, you practically signed a confession. Marlo, you understand what's happening to you, don't you? You understand what's going to happen to you?
I let the receiver hang and let him talk into nothing, and I ran. Off the coast highway, down the beach. A couple of miles. Farther to Santa Monica Pier. Farther to Ocean Park. Me. Wanted for murder. Because Karen, dead Karen, wanted a part of my life, and I wouldn't give it to her. Because her girlfriend stuck her face into mine and yelled, "Cop!" Girlfriend, Phyllis George. I found her address in the Venice phone book. I went there. Rooming house overlooking one of the phony canals they have. Second floor rear. Phyllis, scared, staring, holding it in.
You just get out, you hear? Just keep away from me.
You gotta help me, you understand? Things you know about Karen. Fellas she knew. One fella, maybe, who wanted her dead.
You did it. Nobody wanted her dead.
Help me.
What was it you had with Karen? It makes you choke her and kill her and throw her out in the ocean like she was...
I didn't kill her.
You get out of here, huh? Because you scare me. Because you...
Just listen, huh? Anything you know about her that I can take to the cops...
Keep away. Kill her.
Shut up.
Like Karen, huh? That's how you choke? That's what you did to her, killer? That... Like you wanted to do to me just now?
No, I don't. Don't do.
Hello.
Lou, this is Jeff.
Where are you, kid?
Listen, how's Janie? I didn't call her because the line's probably tapped or something. How's Janie, Lou?
She's okay. Where are you?
I want you to meet me, Lou. Tell me how things are going. How... I gotta talk to somebody.
Sure. Where are you?
Phone booth outside a drive-in laundry in Venice, Rose and 3rd Avenue.
I'll pick you up there, kid.
Right away, Lou.
Right away.
How you feeling, kid?
Scared, Lou.
I'll bet.
How did I get into this, Lou? What happened? Why am I running away?
Jeff, let's not...
Let's not what?
Let's not kid, too. That alibi I gave you.
Oh, what do you mean, let's not kid, Lou?
The way you pounced on the alibi, paying blackmail. Is that any way for an innocent...
You're saying what, Lou?
Come on, Jeff.
You really think I killed her, don't you?
Listen, Jeff, Janie and I were talking.
Janie thinks I killed her.
Yeah. Yeah, she does, Jeff. You ask and I told you.
Okay. Okay. What are we stopping for?
This is where you're getting out.
What are you talking about? Hey, what is this?
Open the door, Marlo. That's the boy. Now, come on out. That's it. You can slide out, too, Mr. Foster.
Sure. Sure.
Lou.
That's right. I told Mr. Anders I'd bring you here, kid.
Look, I didn't kill her. I did a lot of things wrong, but I didn't...
Just don't whimper, Jeff, huh? The old nerve, kid. Like sliding in on a big one. Like the thrill things, kid, huh? Like you and Karen.
It wasn't like that.
How was it, kid, huh? What was the formula? Flex the muscle and be polite. Brown eyes looking up at you and here, take my coat. You must be cold and let's have a beer and back to the beach.
Ooh.
Back to the beach and after all of it, she was only kidding all the time. What did you strangle her for?
The coat, Lou. How did you know about it?
What?
The coat. My coat I put on her.
Sure, the one she was drowning.
There was no coat.
I went back there after she'd been murdered. Took the coat from her and burned it. The same crazy reason I did everything wrong. How do you know about the coat, Lou?
Now, look.
Nobody knew about that coat but me and whoever killed her.
Then why did you come running to me for an alibi?
I didn't, Lou. You suggested I ought to have one. You would be my alibi. That way you'd have one, too.
What about it, Foster?
What can he say? Those phone calls. Call and hang up till Janie got on the line. Then let Janie listen to her in pain and calling out my name. Start suspicion right at home base. You really built it, didn't you?
We better go.
Hey, don't do that, Foster! Stop! Hey! Hey, don't!
Lou didn't die. He'll stand trial. Summer's fading and vacation's long over. But sometimes... Sometimes on weekends, Janie drives me out to Point Dume, and we sit there, and we watch the sunset ride in on the long, slow curve of surf, and we don't talk.
Valley 103.1.
Recall that Maggie is my girl, and her folks, they had us in the world. When we went out, each night we always found they were following us all around. There was her father, her mother, her sister, and her brother. Oh, I never saw Maggie alone. I turned my mind inside out just to try to figure out how I could somehow get Maggie alone. I got the measles, rushed to her house. She was alone, and when her folks got home, there was a sign hanging there saying, quarantine, beware. Now I always see Maggie alone. There was her father, her mother, her sister, and her brother. Oh, her family we just couldn't lose. And so without hesitation, I made a reservation for taking a long ocean cruise. The day the boat sailed, we stood on shore. I wasn't sore. The tickets that I bought were for her father and mother, her sister and her brother. Now I always see Maggie alone. There was her father, her mother, her sister and her brother. Oh, we knew we must do something soon. Then finally we had our say on the day we stowed away on a rocket ship bound for the moon. When we got up there, I looked below. I was no dope, 'cause through my telescope I saw her father, her mother, her sister, and her brother. And I knew I had Maggie. Yes, I knew I had Maggie. Now I'll always have Maggie alone.
audience Mickey Rooney in a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
You got the gate. Oh, shut up! I've been kicked out of better colleges.
Son, why don't you leave that bottle alone?
I know it's none of my business. Are you my father?
Of course not. I'm only trying.
Well, then don't call me son. And you're right. It's none of your business.
Why, you fresh one. If I were your father, I'd be ashamed to admit it. I watched where you got on. It's in the middle of the semester. Bounced out on your ear, weren't you? I know your type. Taking everything you can get from the old man and not giving anything back. Only grief and gray hair.
Ah, oh, shut up!
Mansfield, next station, stop Mansfield.
Put away that bottle, kid. You're home.
Mansfield!
The old hometown depot again. Didn't look friendly. Nobody was going to look friendly. The whole term's tuition fee shot for the third time. Well, Dad would try to cover up what he felt. But she wouldn't. Not glad. I could hear her already in my imagination.
Oh, so you're home again. Guess you found out it was all a waste of time. They couldn't teach you anything in college. Maybe they ought to change things. Maybe they ought to learn from you. But make them pay, Marty, dear. Make them pay. Maybe we get back some of the money you wasted. What do you think you are, a rich man's son? Oh, I knew you from the day I married your father. And I expect to see the day when I have to send you cartons of cigarettes up to the pen.
Well, I was going to hear it again. No way of stopping that mouth. To break the ice, I called home from the station. 5 minutes later, I called again. Busy. So I waited, and 5 minutes later, I called again. Talking. That's all she ever had for a peroxide. Talk with a cheap crowd person. It wasn't my dad on the telephone. He was in Baltimore working. Well, I grabbed a bus and went home. Glad. Hey, Glad, it's me. Hey, Glad, it's your loving stepson. Look at that. Didn't even bother to hang up the telephone. What a woman. Hello. What's that? Hello. Who is it? It was a man. It would be, with her. Heard my voice, thought it was Dad and hung up. Dad had come home early today. Plenty of sign. It was the paper he always picked up in Baltimore. Cigarette stub. I knew it was his. That awful Turkish brand he'd been smoking since before I was born. No one else could stand. Yeah, he came home early. They must have gone out. I wandered into her bedroom. No reason. Just wandered. You know what I saw? She was curled up on the bed. Yes, Glad, curled up on the bed, sort of cuddling me. No makeup. Hair all glued up with bleach stuff of hers, and she was dead. But dead. Somebody had broken her neck. If ever a man deserved a break, it's my dad. If ever a man deserved a decent, loving wife like my real mother. If ever a man deserved the kind of son fathers dream about instead of the mutt, the rat I'm turning out to be. Well, I didn't have much time for philosophizing. I got rid of the newspaper, cigarette butt. I mussed my hair, tore my clothes. Picked up her dead hand with those purple cat-like fingernails, and I scratched it across my face. Ow! You'd think she was alive, the way those nails dug in. And then I went to the phone.
Police headquarters.
Hello, this is Martin Delavan calling from 22 Beach Street South.
Yeah?
I think you better send somebody around to pick me up. I just murdered my stepmother.
Now,
don't get cocky with me, young fella. And just remember that you put yourself in a jam that always turns out to be pretty rugged. Let's have the story again.
Look, I've told it to you twice.
Let's have it again.
You don't have to play McTavish of Scotland Yard. You don't have to find the killer. I told you I did.
But you make it sound so exciting. Let's have it again.
Okay. Beginning where?
You were expelled from college this morning for drinking.
They always expel me for drinking.
You took the early afternoon train at State Junction, got out here about 6 and telephoned from the state. Take it from there.
The line was busy. I took a bus from the station. I came in without making any noise. Just didn't happen to make any. From the hall out there, I hear this... I heard my stepmother talking on the phone.
To a man?
Yes.
How'd you know it was a man?
I could tell.
Come on, boy. What was she saying?
She said enough.
I'd like to find out what makes enough. Well?
What makes enough? The point when you put your hands around somebody's neck and start to squeeze.
She was two-timing your father, huh? All right, go on.
I guess I lost my head. I remember grabbing her by the neck just as she heard me and turned around, and I remember her fingernail coming up toward my eyes and digging into my face. Would you say she did a good job on me? Yeah, look at these scratches.
You did a better one on her. Well, this about checks with what you said before.
Good for me.
You don't want to change anything?
I want you to take me downtown and book me.
No hurry. I want you to reenact this for us before a motion picture camera.
Movies? That'll be fun. Say, what's the matter? You don't look happy. Would it have pleased you more if you'd had to beat it out of me with a rubber hose?
Maybe. Maybe it would. Endicott.
Right here, Lieutenant.
Now break out your camera.
I burned a piece of paper in the kitchen stove. The ashes are still warm.
Now, which paper? Can you make it out?
No. The ashes are all stirred up.
Did you burn a newspaper, kid?
Yes.
Why?
Well, after I killed her, I got kind of a chill, and I thought I'd start a fire.
You changed your mind.
That's right.
So you just waited for it to burn out, and you just stirred up the ashes, huh?
Listen, if people were always rational, they wouldn't commit murders.
Oh, psychologists, too, huh? Okay, set up the first shot from the hallway, Endicott, as he comes in.
Jack?
Where's your father, Donovan? Where can we reach him?
I don't want him pulled into this. Leave him alone. Don't start jabbering at him, making things worse than they
are. Get hold of your blood pressure, Bob. It happens that you killed his wife. Now, where do we reach him?
He's in Baltimore. Henry Dullivan Company, in Port Nexport.
Commutes every day?
Yeah, but he wouldn't be at his office now. It's long past closing time.
All right with you. Thank you, old man, huh?
Oh. I guess he passes.
And that's all?
We haven't seen much of each other since he married that... Since he got married again. I get expelled from different colleges, and he balls me out, and I write him for checks. He sends them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's make our try for the Oscar, shall we? You just go through the motion, starting at the door. Exactly as it happened.
Without my makeup, Lieutenant?
Very funny. Except there's a dead woman in the bedroom. You better change your attitude, kid. Who's this?
It's my father, please. Take it easy with him. Dad! Dad!
What's going on in my house? Marty, what are you doing here this time of year?
Let me break into it my way.
You shut up.
We're glad. Where's your mother? What are all the police doing around here? Marty, speak up.
All right. I'll get to you straight. She's dead.
What? What do you mean?
You know what dead means? She's dead. I killed her.
No, Marty, don't say that. It isn't true. Why, you don't know how...
I killed her. How would you know anything about it? You were in Baltimore. You were in Baltimore, weren't you?
A gentleman, please.
I'm Lieutenant Steele.
Lieutenant, don't listen to my boy. He couldn't have possibly...
Don't try to tell anybody what I couldn't have done. You know I always wanted to kill her. Anyway, you weren't here. You were in Baltimore until now, at your office.
I wasn't in my office.
Dad!
I didn't feel very well along about noon. I quit for the day. May I see my wife, please?
In the bedroom. And what did you do for the rest of the day, Mr. Delavan?
You don't have to answer that, Dad. You don't have to say anything. I've signed a full confession, Dad.
I went to a Turkish bath, and I stayed there for several hours.
Now we can check that easily enough.
Of course. I'm sorry to say that my son is right, Lieutenant. I wasn't here.
When you commit a crime, it's as though someone snapped a switch and the sun went out. Now you live in shadow. You wear faded blue denims with your number on them. You're surrounded by so much iron, doors and bars, and the bed you sleep on. You weigh every word before you say it. Because it might make the difference between living and dying. Most of the time, you're angling to live. By the time I was through, I made sure I would die.
You did a bad thing, Marty. Why did you do it?
The important thing is that I did it. That's what we got to keep remembering. Now, don't let me down. You haven't said anything, have you?
About what?
About you.
Well, what's there to say?
What's there to... Oh, I get it. I get it. Swell. Swell, we'll keep it that way.
Oh, I suppose I ought to be able to understand what you're trying to say, Marty, but I can't. I'm so confused. They keep hammering away at me, trying to break down my story, where I was, and...
Well, that Turkish bath routine wasn't very bright. They can check on that, Dan.
They did. There's no question about that, Marty. I was there.
When?
All that afternoon, from 2 until 5.
Who says you were there, besides yourself?
Well, the clerk, the attendants, the rubbers. Now, they all know me, Marty. I've been going there every Wednesday for months.
This couldn't be true. Everything else about the whole nightmare could happen. It was happening. But not this. He had killed her. He must have killed her. I'd hung a perfect claim on myself because he did it.
What's the matter, son?
Dad, how would that day's Baltimore paper get into our house before you came home?
Well, it's delivered to me. I buy one in the morning to read it on the way in, and the one that's delivered I read in the evening at home.
It's that simple. And I suppose you're going to tell me that since I've been away, Gladys learned how to smoke those Turkish blowtorches.
No, but, well, you know how chain smokers are, son. They're bound to run out of their own brand sometime, and they'll smoke anything they can get their hands on.
Anything they can... Oh, sure. Anyone could figure that out.
But why talk about newspapers and cigarettes, Marty? We have only 5 minutes together.
Don't talk about anything. What a chump I've been. What a sap. Oh, Dad. Dad, you don't know.
I know only one thing, Marty. That you didn't do it.
How do you know that?
Well, who would have known better?
What does that mean?
Why, you're my boy. Oh, you've been wild, but that was because you were so hurt when I remarried.
When she turned out to be what she was.
Oh, you don't have to keep reminding me of that, son.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dad, I'm sorry.
Anyway, I know my boy, Marty. And you didn't kill her.
Makes no difference, Dad. I got an airtight case against me. I'm going to fry just as crisp as though I did it.
I never thought for more than a second that you killed her, Marty. The way you kept jabbering, you were in Baltimore, I was here, you were in Baltimore, like a needle stuck in a reckon.
What can we do now, Lieutenant?
Do? Well, it's out of my hands. You go to trial.
Trial? For what? You say you know I didn't kill her.
Listen, kid, you framed yourself too well. You didn't leave a shred of evidence that points to the real killer. You had a motive. You cleaned up every trace of someone else, and now that someone else is laughing up his sleeve.
But... Wait a minute, they can't convict me and execute me for a crime I didn't commit.
Take it easy, kid.
Take it easy? You mean take the rap? You mean you'd like me to sit with my hands folded like a good little boy and let him shave my skull, slit open my pants leg because somebody else broke her neck?
Well, have you got a real idea who that somebody could be?
How would I know? Do you think I ran around with her friends? I never saw one of them. But I'll bet she had a little black book that was so full it was spilling over.
Son, I told you, this thing is out of my hands. According to police routine...
Oh, we're talking about her life! Don't you understand my life?
And I'm trying to tell you that you're talking to the wrong man. See the DA, kid. He's the only one who can help you.
Every word of my confession was a deliberate lie, sir. A lie. See, I dictated it, and I reenacted the whole thing before the camera because I thought I was protecting someone else, see?
The real murderer?
No, but I thought so at the time.
So what was this somebody's name?
I'd rather not tell you that.
Why not, if he's innocent?
Because I don't want him dragged through the mud.
Here's the report you've been waiting for, sir.
Oh, thanks, Endicott.
Yes,
sir. Yes. Now, look, Delavan, I'm too busy to play games. This report establishes beyond doubt that it was your skin and blood under her fingernails. That clinches it for me.
But wait a
That's
minute,
all.
Don't you...
I'll see you at the trial. And I guess you know how it'll come out.
callous was this killer, so conscienceless, that not only did he freely admit his guilt, he willingly reenacted the whole ghastly thing before the police department's camera, as you've seen. Far from showing remorse for his crime, he gloried in it. You know the evidence. His fingerprints, his blood under her nails. I ask that you return a verdict that will make mandatory the extreme penalty. Death for Martin Delavan.
I'm going to die. Dad, find a way out for me, will you?
I don't know
will
where
find
to
a way?
Turn, Marty. I'd give my life to save you.
Would you, Dad? Would you sometimes, you know, people just use that expression. I sometimes wonder if they really would do a thing like that.
Isn't that what you did for me? It's such a shame, Marty, that this should happen to us because of her. The only good thing she ever did was to bring us together again. By dying.
Then you knew all about her?
For a long time. But I kept hoping.
Well, maybe she didn't appreciate you, Dad, but but I do.
You're not so bad yourself.
Dad?
Yeah?
It's probably too late, but one part of my story was true. She had been talking to somebody.
What?
The receiver was off the hook, and there was still a party on the other end.
Who was it?
That I don't know. I picked up the receiver, and I said, hello. I heard a funny kind of gasp and then a click. Dad, don't you see? It means somebody's ear was in on that murder. We've got a witness. Somebody who knows I didn't do it. He and the guy who murdered him.
All right. Time's up, kid.
Huh? Let me have just another 5 minutes.
We got rules here, mister.
I'm just the right guy to be worried about rules. Shove off, will you?
Come on now.
Wait a minute.
Let's not make a fuss.
Shove off, will you? Dad, did you try everything? Try everything. Take your hands off him.
Listen. Just because you're going to die, don't give you any special privileges.
No,
everybody.
Leave me, go.
Hey, Joe.
Dad. Dad, help me.
Come on, Marty. Tell me what to do.
Help me, Dad.
Marty, tell me how to help you.
Steal. Steal, Dr. Steele. Lieutenant Steele. Tell him. Tell him about the phone call. Tell him we've got a witness. Dad, remember it's a matter of time. I have a gun.
Look, Miss Jane, a boy's life depends on this, and we haven't got much time, either.
Is there anything I can do to help?
Fine, now let's see. It was around 6 PM when Marty Delavan got off the train and tried to call home.
Uh-huh.
He got a busy signal. Let's give ourselves a break and say it was the same party who was on the line when he came home. Could you trace that call?
I can try, Lieutenant. A call that long would have plenty of overtime on it.
Well, stretch it out a little, kind of narrow down the field. Say 5 minutes before he called, another 10 before he gave up, another 10 to get out to the house on the bus, and then coming in, looking around, finding the receiver off the hook. Say 45 minutes. Oh, my gosh.
What's the matter?
I just happened to think. What if Mrs. Delavan put in that call? You'd have a record of it, but the charge would be on her bill. That wouldn't show the name of the person she was calling.
Those are the breaks. I'll see what I can do.
Hello.
Hello, Lieutenant.
Oh, what'd you find?
Well, that call was placed by Mrs. Delavan.
No.
To a Mr. William J. Simmons.
Sure. What?
You see, Mrs. Delavan always complained about her bills. She never stopped saying we were cheating her. Well, we had to put a monitor on her telephone and make a record of every number she called.
Fine, fine. But what was that name?
Beginning at 5:30 on the evening of November 3rd, Mrs. Delavan talked for 39 minutes to a subscriber named William J. Simmons, 798 Shore Avenue.
That kid isn't any of the things you called him in the courtroom. I know. And I couldn't stand by and see him fry for a murder he didn't commit.
Steele, you're a fine detective, but a little too much of an optimist. Now, this weasel you brought in here, his story is only as good as the amount of proof you can attach to it.
Look, I'm no weasel. I didn't want to get mixed up in this because I got a wife and kids, see? You know what it means if your wife finds out you've been playing around?
Tell it into the dictagram.
Huh? How do I start?
With your name.
William J. Simmons, 798 Shore Avenue.
Okay. You were acquainted with Mrs. Gladys Delavan?
Yes.
You were in love with her?
Well, in a way.
Tell us what you heard over the telephone at 6 o'clock on the evening she was murdered.
Well, we were talking, just talking, see, about how we felt. Suddenly I hear this guy's voice on the phone somewhere off in her house. He yells, "Where were you yesterday? We had a date, didn't we?" Then he comes closer, still yelling.
What did he say?
Oh, all kinds of stuff. Names, things like that. Then she begins to scream. Don't, Steve. Don't. You're hurting me, Steve. I can tell he's got her by the neck. He's choking her. I can tell he's choking her.
Come on, kid, on your feet.
Is it time?
Time for what?
You know...
I don't know anything. You're wanted in the warden's office. Come on.
What's up?
Search me. Hey, that's pretty good. I'm the guard, you're the prisoner, but I say you search me.
Do you know who's with the warden?
Well, that local Dick Steele.
McTavish of Scotland Yard.
A couple of other guys and your old man.
My father? What do they want with my father?
Search me. Hey, I said it again.
We ought to hold you for obstructing justice, young fellow, but I suppose you and your father have suffered enough.
So it was somebody else. Somebody else all the time.
Your description of the murdered lady was very accurate. She got around.
Who is he? How'd you find him?
Well, that's a pretty terrific story, Marty. You see, we traced the guy who was on the phone, and he heard Mrs. Delavan holler the name Steve. Now, a detective has to be smart. He's got to be a psychologist, a science bug, an incredible kind of a guy who can take the name Steve and pick a murderer out of 140 million people. So how did I do it?
Well, how?
I opened her little black address book. Remember, you tipped me off to that. And looked for a guy named Steve. And there he was, Steve Barton. So I picked him up.
McTavish. Of Scotland Yard.
And this time with a real confession.
How do you feel now, son?
I don't know. I've done so much thinking about what it means to die that I'm not sure which world I'm standing in.
Now, tell me, kid, what was the name of that newspaper you burned, and who did smoke that cigarette?
Dad, is all this on the level?
On the level, Martin.
Well, just to keep it on the level, gentlemen, it was the Baltimore Star, the paper my dad always reads, and the cigarette was his favorite brand. Maybe you understand now. Come on, Dad. Take me home.
Dance, ballerina, dance. And do your pirouette in rhythm with your aching heart. Dance, ballerina, dance. You mustn't once forget a dancer has to dance the part. Whirl, ballerina, whirl. And just ignore the chair that's empty in the second row. This is your moment, girl. Although he's not out there applauding as you steal the show. Once you said his love must wait its turn, you wanted fame instead. I guess that's your concern. We live and learn. And love is gone, ballerina, gone. So on with your career, you can't afford a backward glance. Dance on and on and on. A thousand people here have come to see the show as round and round you go. So ballerina, dance. Dance, dance. Thank you. said his love must wait its turn. You wanted fame instead. I guess that's your concern. We live and learn, and love is gone, ballerina gone. So on with your career, you can't afford a backward glance. Dance on and on. A thousand people here have come to see the show. As round and round you go, so ballerina dance.
Moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.